This is Ragweed. I'm thinking about starting a radio show, and if I do, I guess this will be the first episode of it. Guess of whatever the hell I call this radio, anyways. This radio show, anyways. So for this episode, I guess you could say, I'm gonna talk a bit about clustering technologies. Before I get started, I just want to mention a really good book where I've learned a lot about Beowulf clustering. It's called Beowulf Cluster Computing with Linux, second edition. It's quite a good book. I think so anyways. Anyways, on to tonight's topic. So first off, I guess I'll start by defining a cluster. What is a cluster? Well, generally, basically when you get down to it, a cluster is a set of machines working together in parallel to say complete a common task. Clusters use well what is a cluster used for? I mean, clusters are used for a lot of different things. Most notably, one of the more famous clusters has been the Earth si the excuse me the Earth simulator over in Japan, which is used to simulate the Earth. Another cluster you may have heard of is BlueJeans. I also believe a cluster was used to map the Human Genome Project. Basically, clusters come in where, say, they come into play where you have something that you need to get done, say a task, say, let's say you've got a large hash of passwords to crack. Let's say there's a the courts. Let's say you're working for the courts. Some guy gets convicted of some computer crime. They give you this machine. It's got a giant hash of passwords on there. You want to figure out these passwords so you can access, say, I don't know, some of his devices or whatever. Well, let's say he's got 12 character password. Now, on modern hardware, say, I don't know, say at a 3.6 Pentium, whatever. It's gonna take a long, it's you're probably not gonna get it done within like probably 10 years at least, I'd say. However, that's just with one machine. However, if you can take that and you can spread that all that work out over numerous machines, it's gonna make that go a lot faster. And now instead of say having it done over 10 years, you might have it done over say a week. Those aren't real actual statistics, they're just kind of just rolled off the top of my head. So anyways, to dive right in, there's a couple different types of clustering technologies you may have heard of. Probably the most famous one people have heard of is Beowulf clustering. There's also other clustering types such as MOSIX, if I'm pronouncing that right, and OpenMOSIX, which is basically an open free version of the MOSIX technology. And then there's also some other smaller ones that you may not heard of. One of them is called Condor. CONDOR, like the bird. Okay, so how clusters work? Well, like I said before, clusters, they're a group of machines that are working together to perform a common task. Now, generally what happens is all of the machines are usually networked and have some means of communicating with each other. Now, oftentimes you'll see things like gigabit Ethernet being used in clusters or, sometimes Mirinet, which is I believe uses fiber optics. You also see some a lot of times proprietary interfaces. If you okay, so basically, all these computers are networked together, and through this network, each machine communicates with the other machines. And let's say I want to calculate the sum of the square roots between, say, I don't know, 1 and 16, right? Well, that can be done fairly quickly on, a modern processor. However, if I want to calculate the sum of square roots between, say, 1 and 2 million, that's going to take a bit longer. So, what I do is I'm writing the application. Nowadays, applications are usually written in C, but a while back they were written in Fortran. I can get to that a little bit later on. But so I'm writing my application. Now, normally, it'd just be a strictly, serial application written for one processor. So I just, break it up. I do take the square roots, add them up, and then end the program. Well, in this case, what I have to do is I have to somehow send jobs to the other machines for them to process. So let's say I could give, say I have five machines, and I want to calculate sum of square roots between, say, 1 and a million. Well, I could go to the first machine and say, hey, you, calculate the sum of square roots between 1 and 200,000. Second machine, I could say, hey, you, calculate the sum of the square roots between 200,000 and, say, 400,000. And I could keep going down on the line, so on and so on. And then eventually what happens is, so it sends out all these jobs, and they communicate back to a machine. That machine now has the results, and optimally, everything has just gone from, you know, say, let's say maybe, I don't know, taking 25 seconds on one machine, taking, say, 5 seconds when it's distributed out through all the different machines. So, I mean, obviously that's a very simplex example of it, but in general, that's how it all works. Now, like I said before, most modern applications nowadays are written in C. However, when, you know, a lot of clustering technologies first started coming up, and, you know, there's this whole parallel, and there was parallel processing coming about, many of the applications were written in Fortran, because that was around and Fortran worked best for it. So a lot of times nowadays you will see applications in Fortran designed to run in parallel or run on clusters. Now, staying on the topic of how clusters work, generally with clusters, what happens is an application is written, and then a cluster is built around that application for it to work. However, it can be done in other ways. For example, IBM's BlueJeans supercomputer, which right now is the fastest cluster in the world, they lease out their clusters so that other people can use it. And by doing this, you know, course, they generate revenue, and the people that want to lease the cluster have to design an application to work with BlueJeans. So now that we've covered, a bit of the programming aspect, we haven't gone too in depth. We've covered how it interconnects. So what else is there? Okay, yeah, software. What software do the clusters use to perform these tasks? Well, right now the biggest thing that clusters are using for, as far as an operating system goes, is your favorite OS and mine, Linux. Well, and I mean, some of the reasons are quite obvious as to why you'd use Linux for a cluster. I mean, one, there's a large community out there that you can get support from. Two, Linux is highly customizable. And, you know, so that way, I mean, you can strip down the kernel to the bare bones, so that way you can get maximum performance. Now, you know, stripping out, you know, SSH and things like that might not be a big deal for a home machine, but on a cluster, when you're performing these highly scientific calculations and doing a lot of number crunching, every little bit that you can strip down helps out a lot. And so that's another reason. And also, take an example scenario. I've got a cluster, I've got a problem with it, and I know it's the manufacturer. Let's say we're clustering with Microsoft Windows. So I call up Microsoft and I say, hey, listen, I'm having a problem with the cluster. And I tell them the details, and they go, oh, well, that's a problem on your end. Well, you go back, you check it out, everything's fine on your end. You call them back up, they keep telling you the same thing. Now you're locked in a struggle with the vendor, where the vendor's unwilling to provide support for something that you've currently got going on. And it's the vendor's fault, so now you spent all this expensive, money on this expensive software, and, now you're basically getting the shaft because you're not getting support. Whereas with something like, say, Linux, there's independent counseling places where you can go to get support from. Then, of course, there's the general user community, which is most often the most helpful support one can ever find. Also, you'll see things like Unix is also on there quite a bit. You see some Unixes. Also, you'll see some operating systems. Some non-common operating system. I'm not sure if they're proprietary or not, or if they're developed specifically for the cluster, but when I was briefly browsing the top 500 list, which was recently updated, if you're unfamiliar with the top 500 list, the top 500 list is it's the list of the top 500 fastest supercomputers out there. And this list is compiled, and the way they determine the fastest is they use a benchmarking software that's specifically designed for clusters. And the software is called Linpack. Linpack. So that just a little bit about the top 500. Okay, so the hardware of clusters. What do they run on? Well, like I said before, common types of, for example, let's say Beowulf clustering, commonly runs on commodity, consumer hardware that you can go to a store and buy. Okay, so oftentimes, I mean, you'll see things from very extremes. You'll see things from, say, a P2, 333 with, 128 megs of RAM to, say, a quad Opteron with 32 terabytes of RAM. And because, like I said before, generally a cluster is built around the application that you have. And this allows you to buy hardware to tailor the needs of the cluster. So, I mean, if I've got something that's, say, insanely CPU, number crunching, just calculations, calculations, calculations intensive, I may opt for the quad Opteron with 32 terabytes of RAM. Whereas if I've got something like, say, that's I've got to do a lot of input output where it's got to go bounce around a bunch of machines, and it's not really all that heavy as far as the number crunching side of things go, I may opt for, say, 20 P2-333s with 128 megs of RAM running, say, instead of, say, maybe gigabit Ethernet with, say, the quad Opterons, because I don't have to do that much, sending information back and forth down the line. I may opt for something, faster, like I may opt for some fiber network, network things with fiber, since I'm moving a lot more data, at, faster and faster speeds of time. And, that, the Ethernet, like gigabit Ethernet in this scenario, might be the bottleneck. So when it comes down to hardware, the hardware is generally, it's custom tailored. It's defined as it's really fit around the application, like I've said before. Now, let's say, well, I don't really know that much about hardware. I want to get into the clustering thing, but I don't want to go out buy the hardware and screw something up. Well, there are companies out there that will provide a cluster for you. One of these companies right now is penguincomputing.com. That's the only one I know of offhand, but if I'm sure if you just Google for companies, and you'll probably come up with something in a matter of minutes. Okay, now actually I want to expand my definition of what I said about clusters earlier, about how their machines working in tasks to do things together, perform common tasks. Well, this whole time I've been mentioning things, like insane number crunching, things of that nature. Well, it's not always like that. There are other categories that clustering would fall into. For example, Google. They use a large cluster because they serve out millions of people a day. So in this scenario, they've got a lot of machines, but they're not exactly doing some insane number crunching. They're, generating queries and searching through databases and things of that nature to bring you your results. So it's not any all. I mean, there's also software out there that'll say cluster a bunch of FTP servers together. So I just want to expand that a little to make sure everyone, all the listeners out there, realize that, clustering isn't just about insane number crunching and just, pounding at mathematical formulas. However, a lot of times it is. Okay, well, now that we know the basics of clustering, I guess I'll start getting into, excuse me, let me get a drink here real quick. Talk a little bit about the different types of clustering, different types of clustering technologies. Like I said, most common, Beowulf computing. Like I said, it's most common. There's also another form of Beowulf computing, which is sort of a branch off it. It's called the Cyclid, Scyld, and Cyclid Beowulf. And as far as I believe that Cyclid is something you actually have to pay for, whereas just general straight up Beowulf clustering is, it's free for everyone. Now, I'm not too sure about the advantages of Cyclid right now. I really should have been better prepared. My fault. But if you want to check it out, you can go to scyldcyclid.com. You can get some more information there. Another tip of clustering you may have heard of, Mosix. I'm not, MOSIX, and Open Mosix, which Open MOSIX. Now, the Mosix technologies, they use, they're extremely threaded. And what I mean by threaded is, now some of the disadvantages of having something that's threaded like that is, well, it makes your code harder to write, makes it harder to debug, things of that nature, which, you know, I mean, if you're not that great of a programmer, you might want to try and stay away from that. But also one thing that is very, very, very cool about some of the Open Mosix technologies is that there's this thing, and I like to sort of consider it like basically cluster in a can, and they're bootable clusters, sort of like, you know, Nopix. Actually, I think many of them actually do use Nopix. Basically, you stick the CD in there, and boots up, and it's Mosix, and it all syncs together, and then it starts distribute, and, you know, you can start running your application through there. I haven't really had a chance to play with Mosix at all. However, if you want to check out more information about Open Mosix, you can go to openmosix.sourceforge.net. It's openmosix.sourceforge.net. Okay, now, Condor. Well, actually, before I get into Condor, I want to mention one more thing about Beowulfs. Generally, with Beowulf clustering, the hardware that you have is all the same, meaning you'll have it's a homogeneous cluster, meaning you'll have, you know, one machine that's exactly the same as the other machine and the other machine and the other machine. This makes things a lot easier. Now, you may be thinking, well, why does it matter? I mean, well, sometimes having multiple machines, let's say I have one that's 2.8 gigahertz, I have Palm Pilot thrown in there, I've got, I don't know, some older stuff I took out of a dumpster. Well, wouldn't that be better than, you know, wouldn't that all be better? You know, the more machines, the better. Well, that's not always the case. I'll give you an example. Let's say I've got two machines. Let's say I'm using my Palm Pilot. Say it's running a 66 megahertz ARM processor or whatever, and I got my main rig, which is, you know, 2.8, you know, Intel Pentium 4 with Northwood core. Now, let's say I'm going to calculate, let's use the example from before, some of the square roots. Now, you might think that by using both machines, it's going to go faster. However, it may in fact take longer, because you may experience a problem where, let's see, I divide the batch ups, I divide it into half and half. So sum of square roots between 1 and a million. So I send my PDA, I send that between sum of square roots between 1 and 500,000, and my main rig, the 2.8 Northwood, takes sum of square roots between 500,000 and a million. Well, great, right? Now I've got two machines working on it at the same time. Well, might be a problem here. Your main machine is going to be able to do a lot more calculations than your 66 megahertz ARM, you know, PDA over there. So what may happen is by the time your main machine gets, you know, done with its whole batch, that ARM processor may only be, you know, a 16th of the way through. But now the your main machine, the Pentium's, waiting on that batch from the processor. However, there are ways to overcome this, and I believe it's called watermarking. And watermarking, basically what it does is it splits it up, the batches, more evenly. So you could, say, send the ARM only, I don't know, maybe 20 numbers, say 1 through 20, of calculate some square roots of that, while your main machine could be taking, you know, more, the majority of it. Okay, now talk about Condor. It's cool thing about Condor is that it's quite easy to implement in a heterogeneous cluster, meaning, let's say I take a school or an office setting or something, and I've got all these different machines all throughout the school, and let's say I want to use them to cluster. Well, like I said before, you might have problems with all these machines of different, you know, capacities. Well, the nice thing about Condor is it's very easy to implement. And even if you're running multiple operating systems, like, I mean, you could integrate it into Windows. Let's say you're running Windows, Linux, Unix, and Solaris, all in, you know, one building. Condor will run in all of these. Also, Condor is free. So, yeah, I mean, you can go online to Condor's website, and just download the software. And the website, if you're interested, is www.cs.wisc.edu/Condor. That's www.cs, as in computer science, dot W, as in Williams, I, intelligence, S, stupid, C, cynical, dot E, educational, D, discount, U, euphonium, /Condor. And that's Condor. Another type of technology that also integrates very well with the heterogeneous networks is called Inferno. Inferno is developed by Bell Labs. Yeah, that's right, the same guys that developed you know, the transistor and Unix. Unlike Condor, this is extremely expensive. However, much like Condor, it does integrate very well into heterogeneous environments, and it runs off many different platforms. Form of parallel processing, we've talked about, clustering technologies like, Beowulf, Mosix, things of that nature. Another type of clustering technology is, I shouldn't really say clustering technology, parallel processing technology, is MPI. MPI stands for Message Passing Interface, and it's exactly like the acronym describes it. Basically, it was designed for use in, things like clusters, and it was designed for, so that they could communicate in, large parallel applications. It was developed, according to the website, it says here, it was developed by a broadly based committee of vendors, implementers, and users. It is available for free.
Hooray.
That about wraps things up for my basic introduction to clustering. Keep in mind, what I've talked about is barely, I mean, it's scratching the surface, there's so much more to clustering. I encourage you all to get into it. I personally think it's fascinating. Also, if you want to check out more about MPI, the website is that I have currently is www.unix.mcs.anl.gov/MPI. That's www.unix.mcs.anl.gov/MPI. More information about clustering, of course, Google. Also, a good book that I owe a lot of my knowledge about clustering to is called Beowulf Cluster Computing with Linux, second edition. It's a good book. Some people, the really only complaints I've really heard about the book is that it's not necessarily specifically in clustering. It also talks a lot about hardware, and it talks a bit about Linux, too. And the reason it does that is so that going into getting into the actual clustering, you're aware of, hardware, things like that, very, lower-level stuff that's going to come into play a lot with the clustering. It's by no means, extremely childish or anything. That it's not like, this is a, monitor, the monitor displays stuff. This is the keyboard. You input text here. It's not like that. It's actually I learned a lot actually about the hardware from this book. It's a great book. It doesn't just cover Beowulf clustering though. It also covers things like MPI. It covers PVM, parallel virtual machine. It talks about managing the clusters, setting up the clusters. I mean, it talks about a lot. It's a really good book. I bought this book for quite a bit of money. I think it was around $40, which, I mean, it's a computer book. It's kind of what you expect to pay. But yeah, about wraps things up for today's brief intro on clustering. Got any questions, comments, things of that nature? You hate the show, you love the show, whatever. Drop me a line. I want to hear feedback so I can improve this. Just send me a email at whatever the hell I call this shit. One second. Whatever the hell I call this radio at yahoo.com. That's whatever the hell I call this radio at yahoo.com. But no spaces. Drop me a line. I want to hear feedback. Guess shout outs. Shouts go to port7alliance.com, undergroundsystems.org, of course the binrev.com forums. Tonight's closing music will be Drama in the PhD by Moniz. Monzy. Drama in the PhD.
MC++, my rhymes are so fat. I'm P-space complete, but I'll reduce you to 3-sat. My crew is so hard that we roll an NP, and bitches dereference my pointer for free. When I'm linear probing, they're like, damn, that's gigantic. I showed it to your mom, and she used horror semantics. She jumped like J&E up onto my erection, and I picked up that hole like straight garbage collection. Yeah, Mark and sweep on these nuts, bitch. Lyrics get stolen by sucker MCs. I got assigned my rhymes with PGP, but I keep on generating like a CFG, cause there's so much drama in the PhD.
What's wrong, MC++? Am I making you nervous? Even skanky fat hoes give you denial of service. You'll probably go to jail before you write your dissertation, so prepare your asshole for some internal fragmentation. Penetration while they fill it up with jism. It's too bad you aren't closed under homomorphism. Your problem, plus plus, is that your typing ain't strict. In ML, my type is real, and your type is alpha dick.
Control my flow better than TCP. I rep the West Coast like Eazy-E. You best not front if you can't pass the GRE, cause there's so much drama in the PhD.
My flow is so intense that I will overflow your buffer, corrupt your stack pointer, making all your data suffer. I've got saturated edges, but your flow is sparser. Real gangsta sip on yak, you just generate a parser. While you're busy popping stacks, I'll pop a cap in your skull. While you smoke your crack pipe, I'ma pipe you to dev null. I may not have a label, but I rap like a star. I'm an unsigned long it, and you're an 8-bit char.
Your mom circulates like a public key, servicing more requests than HTTP. She keeps all her ports open like Windows ME. Oh, there's so much drama in the PhD.
D word to your moms, I came to drop bombs. I've got more rhymes than San Jose's got .coms. I rep the farm like 50 reps queens, with more power than multi-tape Turing machines. Blowing up the rap scene faster than factorial functions. I'm dope like PNP transistors, and I'll saturate your junctions. By the time you've run online, I've already busted 10. You rap in exponential time, and I'm Big O of log n.
I run G, make N, GCC, and I ain't never called Malik without calling free. I'll beat your ass until it's colored like a red black tree, cause there's so much drama in the PhD.